Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on a new episode of Muslim Lady. In the studio, of course, I have the honor of being with my friend, Sister Razia Shami. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. How are you?
I'm very well. So we've been talking about modesty, haya, and its manifestation, which is chastity. We've explained that modesty is much more than just covering yourself and lowering your gaze. Modesty is a sense of integrity and self-respect. In order to be able to apply haya in our lives, right? So at this point, we are at the role model factor.
Right. The beautiful verse that I wanted to mention about Maryam is, with at the moment, in that stage or setting in her life, when Angel Gabriel comes to her in the form of a well-made, handsome man, and she tells him that, you know, what are you doing? Even, you know, if you're God-wary, be careful of what you're doing. قَالَ إِنِّي أَعُوذُ بِالرَّحْمَنِ مِنْكِ إِن كُنْتَ تَقِيًّا. So if you think...
But then, you know, this dialogue really gets you thinking. Lady Maryam automatically threw the responsibility at the man. You, go be pious, go be God-wary, and don't come close to me.
Because she had fulfilled her own role of being pious.
Yeah.
So he said, you know, I've done my share. Now it's your turn to do your own share. So this case, this role model is, again, going back to our topic of discussion, when the technique of the Quran in teaching parents how to instill haya, first of all, in themselves, and then later on in their children. Obviously, the first place that you cannot accept a woman to become a very modest, you know, well-practicing, virtuous, chaste person in the society, it all starts, that little seed of modesty is there within you, but the parents help it grow and flourish and turn it into a beautiful plant or flower. Otherwise, it will die and get dried away.
Right? So what is it? What are the things that parents can do in order to help cultivate that essence of haya in their children?
Yeah, that's a very good question. There are certain instructions and guidelines that parents are to teach, that, first of all, parents are to act themselves upon, and then instructions that they should tell their children to do. For example, if you recall, in the very couple of first episodes of our series on haya, we said that when a girl reaches a certain age, she's not to be hugged by a non-mahram. The same is for a boy. In terms of how the parents dress in front of their children,
how they interact with one another in front of their children.
I mean, we have to be careful that sometimes parents want to be modest and they go to the other end of this extreme and they don't show any love, any affection, even no kissing, no hugging, no nothing, because children are watching. I personally believe that who else are they going to learn from? If you don't kiss your wife, if you don't kiss your husband, if you don't caress her, if you don't hug him or her, from where in the world are they going to learn? From Hollywood movies?
Yeah.
From your neighbor? Right? So observing codes of modesty, you have to actually show it to you know, the spouses have to show it in front of their children.
For dads to hug and hold their daughters.
Exactly.
You know, a father can caress his daughter. And a mom should, you know, express even physical affection to her son.
But the thing is that, for example, if a woman is like she has a baby boy, until like the age of 2, 3, 4, it's okay for her like to wear shorts or like a
singlet, tight clothes.
They're fine. But like when he's turning 6, 7 and he's beginning to see and recognize and realize so many things about his mom's
appearance,
she should be very careful and modest with respect to what she wears.
Yeah,
I've seen that parents actually sleep with their children, and like the mom is wearing a nightgown. These are instances of not observing haya or modesty in the realm of the family. So, with regards to the way you talk, haya is not only in terms of sexual attractions. Respectful talking, loving words, caring, kind words to each other. Not shouting at each other.
Mm. Well, speaking,
showing appreciation.
Exactly. Speaking to them in a way that they can maintain their integrity and sense of self-worth. Because if you talk to a child in a way that degrades them, the child isn't going to understand that I'm a valuable person, right?
Exactly.
And he's going to grow up or she's going to grow up undermining their own value and worth in life and giving into certain acts that are, in fact, beneath them.
Exactly.
So it's very important, I think, as parents, for us to establish that sense of self-worth, self-respect, integrity, and dignity in our children from an early age, because, well, how else are they going to learn it?
Exactly.
Something else that I feel like I've seen firsthand in a lot of my family members, where kids call their parents by their first names, I personally think it's endearing. You know, I could never get away with it at home, though, to call my parents. Now that I'm older, maybe I kid around and call my mom like by her first name, but I have to put Madame or, you know, Your Majesty the Queen of the universe before it. But I think it's endearing, but I know for a fact that our Islamic teachings tells us not to do it, not to allow it.
Well, there are so many verses in the Quran that says that وَبِرٌ بِوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا, and that to lower the wings of humility and humbleness upon your parents. And even in an office, you wouldn't easily dare to talk to your boss just by his name. So this preserving this levels.
Are you saying that there should be a level of formality?
There should be a level of respect,
uh-huh,
not formality.
Right.
For example, my own daughter, she calls me by my first name, but with the addition of mom.
Uh-huh.
Like mom and my first name.
Mm, right.
Or she calls her dad by Baba Ali, right? So I think this is respectful, and at the same time it shows like closeness and kindness and everything. But there is one incident that I recall, and based on the teachings of that hadith, I think that there should be a level of distinguished respect between parent and son.
My Lord, show me right from wrong. Give me light, make me strong. I know the road is long. Make me strong. Sometimes it just gets too much. I feel that I've lost touch. I know the road.
And this is the case that Imam Ali alayhi salam was with Hanafiya, and once they had a guest.
Muhammad Hanafiya.
And once they had a guest, and it was a father-son guest.
Mm.
And Imam's servant came in to, it was time to have lunch, and the servant came to wash the hands of the guest. And Imam took the picture, and he washed the hands of the father.
Right.
To show, actually, we talked about this as an instance of not having haya when you have guests.
Yeah.
Because in some places, haya is not,
advised
and approved of. And then he told his son, Muhammad Hanafiya, to wash the hands of the son, and he brought a reason. He said, if only the boy had come to my house as a guest, I would have washed the hands of the boy myself. But since there's a father and a son, there should be a difference.
Right.
And there should be a level of respect. Because, you know, in other instances or in other narrations, we have the case that do not stretch your legs, for example. These are like ethical. These
are a hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen that says, stand up in front of your father and your teacher,
exactly,
even if you're a king.
Exactly.
Mm.
So if you take all these points into account, I think it's better to teach our children. You know, there's no contradiction between respect
and being loving and affectionate.
Being loving and affectionate.
Right.
It has nothing to do with that. We're talking about how to teach modesty to children.
Yep.
And then we said, well, you know, number one is the kind of food. If you really want to go to the core, we said that one kind of chastity is not, you know, be so eager to eat so much and, you know,
eat whatever, eat from wherever.
Exactly. So the money that the father earns, if this father himself is originally a modest and chaste man and he cares about halal and haram sustenance and he brings halal food for his children, this definitely is the first instruction.
I had a friend, a childhood friend, whose father would not take them to houses to eat where he knew for a fact that they wouldn't pay khums and zakat.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't eat anything from those homes. He wouldn't bring anything back for his family. He wouldn't take his family to dine there.
Yeah.
Because it affects their spiritual upbringing in ways.
Some people go, again, to extremes. They don't even go to their
relatives'
houses.
Yeah.
They don't pay khums. They don't pay zakat. And some people, they say that, you know, severing ties with the kinship is so harmful and so full of punishment,
exactly,
so full of negative
upon, yeah,
results, that they say, go to the house of your relative, but then pay the khums and zakat yourself.
Right.
Or, you know, I think we have to keep balance,
exactly,
in our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah, so first, halal sustenance, the way you talk, the way you dress in front of your
children,
depending on their sex, depending on their age. Depending, you know, on so many other, like, depending on which society you're living in. When children, like, haven't reached the age of puberty, it happens a lot that, like, mommy and daddy are in the room and
they just walk in, march in.
Because they actually sleep in.
Because they don't feel like, oh, I'm intruding on mom and dad space. This is my room.
It's like four-person bed, mom, dad, two kids.
Exactly.
There is no privacy. I mean, this is not an Islamic lifestyle, I think. So according to the Quran, when upon entering the room of your parents, if you still haven't reached the age of bulugh or puberty, you will have to knock and ask for permission. Let me read this beautiful verse for you. It's in chapter 24, verse number 27, that says, Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu. It's not Ya ayyuha nas. Obviously, we're talking about modest Muslims.
Right.
So, O believers, La tadkhulu buyutan ghayra buyutikum. So this verse is basically talking about houses that do not enter houses other than yourself. Hatta tasta'nisu. Unless you have ask permission, wa tusallimu ala ahliha, and then you say greetings upon the people of the house. Dhalikum khayrul lakum la'allakum tadhakkarun. And this is better for you so that you might be mindful. So the first teaching, it's a very seemingly simple and unworthy and trivial point, but it's a school of thought. It's a path. It's a big milestone, I think. Don't just look at that thing, you know. So what? You know, the child just comes into the room without any permission. But it's a branch that is rooted in a beautiful, strong root of modesty. So this is the first thing that if we want to go somewhere, you have to get permission to enter that place.
Mm.
And after greeting and getting permission, we can enter.
And this rule applies to children when entering their parents' room, and this is something we need to instill in them. Create the concept of privacy for our children from an early age so that they don't feel the need to flaunt themselves social media when they become older. And realize that certain things are below them. That's all the time we have, however, for today's episode of Muslim Lady. Thank you so much for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Who is the lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. To Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity. Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female and made us into nations and tribes so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger to Allah.
The Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
Welcome to the lighter side of the news. It's great to have you with us. Now, a 79-year-old Siberian grandmother ice skates on frozen Lake Baikal to look after her cows, or just to have some fun. Lobosh of Morkodova has lived alone by the world's oldest and deepest lake since her husband died in 2011. Her daily routine consists of chopping wood and carrying buckets of water from an ice hole, keeping cows and regularly hitting the ice. Lobosh uses a pair of steel skates made by her father 76 years ago to check on her cows when they walk too far from her house. When asked why she likes skating, the babushka said because her heart longs for it.
I need my skates for various things. I need them to run errands and I need them for fun, to have a skate or to look for my cows. I can ice skate here and there when walking through the snow is hard. I skate to a direction looking for my cows. And when I see they're not there, I skate to another part and find them roaming there. I call them and they return home, just like that. And without chores, when I just want to ice skate, I can do it.
Even the strong winds, unrelenting cold, and constant hard work don't deter Lubbojosh Morkhodova, whose name translates as love walking on the sea. Since her husband's death, she has been resisting calls from her family to move back to the city. Lake Baikal is often frozen over for half of the year, and the septuagenarian believes skating on it is the secret to her longevity. Two giant pandas at a zoo in Washington take full advantage of the winter season and have a blast playing in the snow. The animals' pure joy, caught on camera, could melt even the iciest of hearts. In a clip shared by the zoo, the adorable panda bears are seen rolling, sliding, and tumbling around in the snow. The zookeepers say the pair's five-month-old male cub also experienced his first encounter with snow. They say he even took a little nip at the fresh powder. However, he only spent a few minutes outside his indoor habitat. The Smithsonian's National Zoo is currently closed to visitors due to the coronavirus pandemic, but its panda cam is available for all to enjoy. Conservationists have rescued a third giraffe from the flooding island of Lake Baringo off Kenya. The daring rescue was the third such operation since the area was hit with intense rain, threatening the survival of the trapped animals. Two other maroon giraffes were transferred to safety in December. Local rangers say the animals are trained before being moved, so they don't need to tranquilize them. They say six other Rothschild's giraffes are still stranded on the shrinking island.
We still have quite a number, six actually giraffes, including the recent young one which was born in December. This is a process that we are trying to look at a case or day-by-day scenario. you know, the moment we train these remaining giraffes, the moment they are ready, we move them. But the target is to move these animals by...
The rangers say they plan to complete moving all the giraffes to a purpose-built sanctuary on the mainland by no later than May. Today there are fewer than 3,000 Rothschild's giraffes in Africa, with 800 of them living in Kenya. The parade of classic and vintage cars has enlivened the streets of the French capital, Paris. About 700 vehicles of various eras drove through the streets of Paris, passing its landmarks such as the Eiffel Tower. Different vehicles, including cars, buses and motorcycles, took part in the show. It was the 21st edition of the parade that takes place twice a year. The event is the most important one for old car enthusiasts in France.
The sniffing abilities of dogs are being put to the test at a leading French veterinary laboratory where dogs are being trained to detect the coronavirus. Five dogs from the canine brigades of the French National Gendarmerie have been training since early January. They sniff at a number of vessels, each containing a piece of cloth with human sweat. Some samples are from patients with COVID-19, negative donors, or even neutral scents. When the canine shows interest in a vessel with a COVID-19 sample, it is rewarded.
It will soon be necessary to screen asymptomatic people in all kinds of spaces, schools, nursing homes, which must continue to be better understood and defined, and airports. This type of tool, which makes it possible to offer at least one strong criterion of suspicion, will facilitate the whole process in terms of user-friendliness, accessibility, and reactivity.
Well, the dog's keen sense of smell is said to be able to detect the coronavirus in 95% of positive cases. It's hoped that the canines will be able to detect COVID-positive people even if they show no symptoms. The animals can be used as a non-invasive way of testing for the viral infection, as well as many other life-threatening illnesses. Igloo, a dome-shaped structure made of snow and ice, gives us an idea of the Inuit of Arctic. But hang on. The ski resort hotel in Indian-controlled Kashmir has come up with a similar idea to attract visitors. The Kolahoy Green Heights has an igloo cafe where tourists can enjoy hot drinks and food in sub-zero temperatures. Even the tables in the Eskimo-style cafe are made of ice and snow. As many as 16 people can sit and chill out in the igloo at any given time. The icy cafe is 25 feet around. Unlike those on the Arctic, this particular igloo has elements of local architecture, like an arched door and patterns on the curved walls.
A French-Swiss artist spray paints a huge fresco on the grounds of Cape Town as part of a global project aimed at fostering unity in a polarized world. The 31-year-old artist tries to convey his message of togetherness in his movement called Beyond Walls. The project consists of frescoes depicting two hands clasping each other's forearms around the world. South Africa's Cape Town represents an essential step of the project due to its history marked by apartheid. The self-taught artist says he wants to create the biggest human chain in the world, and Cape Town is his ninth step.
Because for me, I really trust that it's only together that humanity can respond to the biggest challenge of our time. And this is this message that I want to do by making huge fresco with biodegradable paint directly on the grass. It is a worldwide project, and the idea is to create the biggest human chain to speak about togetherness. And today in Cape Town, this is the ninth step of this project.
Saib uses paint made out of charcoal, chalk, water, and milk proteins to create his art, making it eco-friendly. He was also named one of the most influential young artists by Forbes magazine for his art, which is best viewed from aerial footage. His temporary biodegradable images have been previously painted on lawns in eight cities, including Paris, Andorra, Geneva, Berlin, Ouagadougou, and Istanbul.
A Russian firm has developed a flying taxi in an attempt to solve the problem of transportation in megacities. According to HarvestSafe company, testing the aircraft is now in the final stages. If successful, the drone taxi will go into mass production at the end of 2021. Special runways are not required as the vehicle is as big as a normal car and can land on a parking lot. designers say is capable of carrying two people or up to 300 kilograms of cargo.
The prototype of this flying machine will soon turn into a social device that we're going to build in 2021, and thus all the technologies that we have already built will be applied to this machine. The car will fly with a new type of engine that is installed here.
The flying taxi can reach an altitude of 150 meters and develop a speed of up to 200 kilometers per hour. The company says a flight with air taxi will cost around 27 cents per kilometer. The name Afghanistan may remind many people across the world of some bad news of war, violence and poverty. This is mainly due to the war in Afghanistan, which has been going on for over the past decades. Yet, there are some interesting stories about Afghanistan, its people and their traditions and customs, such as Afghans' food culture. Amin Alami has more in this report.
When it comes to cooking and traditional dishes, Afghans have a lot to say. First of all, this is important to know that meat and rice are inseparable parts of Afghans' food culture.
Afghan traditional dishes like qabili, kebab, karai, mantu, ashak, bulani and doogh are the some you can find available in restaurants, mainly serving traditional delicacies. Each one of these represents the food culture of specific tribes and ethnic groups. Let's see what the manager of this restaurant has to say about some popular local dishes in Afghanistan.
When you want to talk about traditional foods of Afghanistan, you need to test different dishes that are, of course, very delicious. For instance, qabili is a mixture of rice, carrot, kuzini, and lamb meat. Northern Afghanistan is the home to this delicious food, while Western Herat province is well known for its delicious kachiri.
There are some key factors which should be taken into consideration when talking about Afghan food culture. As Afghans themselves say, their food is highly organic. They believe the food culture has made Afghans' bodies much stronger than those who do not have organic meals in their food culture.
We can't leave out meat from cooking. Additionally, our food culture is based on using organic products. This has even helped us have a stronger body.
As there is a wide variety of delicious dishes here, the good news is that the prices are not high. For example, you can serve a complete lunch menu at one of the top restaurants in Kabul by spending at most $15.
If you compare food prices in Afghanistan and other countries, you will find out that you can have the best dish in a top restaurant in Afghanistan by paying less than $20. The quality of food in our country is also better.
As observers say, Afghanistan has many capabilities and interesting attractions to be truly introduced for the globe if the war and politics allow this wounded land to breathe. Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
That's it for the live. Thank you.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful.
Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Nasser Rafi'i. Please stay tuned.
الانسان همانا انسان خلق الانسان من عجل آیه صحیحش اینه خلق الانسان من عجل.
In ayah 37 of Surah Al-Anbiya in the Holy Quran we read, man is a creature of haste. However, in continuation of the same ayah we read, so do not ask me to hasten. Now, one might ask, isn't here in this verse a contradiction? From one side, human is created from haste, and from the other side, humans are asked not to hasten. The main question here is, how a human who is created out of haste must not hasten in his actions? The best answer to this doubt is that Allah has created humans with haste and many attributes like anger or sexual desire, so that He uses them in the positive way. For instance, if there was no haste, no one would try to overtake others in doing good deeds or helping others with their needs. Thus, haste, like any other thing, can be used in both positive and negative ways. It is like a knife with which one can peel the fruit skin or hurt others. Or it's like a hammer in the hands of a blacksmith who beats the iron to make something out of it. The very sense of haste is exactly like this. It is necessary for humans. However, haste has its own timing, and we are not allowed to hasten in all our efforts. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Nasser Rafi'i. To find out more about this program and our other programs, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care, and goodbye.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
The things that he did at that time for this revolution, if today we can say, like, if Iran has the constitution today, it's because of the hard working of Shahid Beheshti, the dedication that he had on this work.
This is a natural principle, that people are affected by the rulers.
One thing very obvious about his character that made him more influential was his management skills. Not only management skills, but in the more modern sense of it, leadership qualities. He was truly a leader. And when it came to him actually leading the whole group of scholars who were working on the Iranian constitution, you can see the high capability of this person.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRabi English Radio. This is the teacher, an analysis on the thoughts and works of the most understanding Muslim scholars and thinkers, jurists and philosophers all across the nation of Islam, with the presence of two experts, guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Dr. Murtaza Zazadeh and Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, welcome to your show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
Dr. Zazadeh, assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome to
show. Wa alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for having me.
That's right. We are mainly concerned with the thoughts and speeches of Shahid Ayatollah Beheshti. Most of his speeches were in Farsi and some of them in English language. We try to select one beautiful part and fruitful part of his speech, playing it in Farsi language along with the English translation, and then we'll start our elaboration with the presence of the experts over here. Let's listen to this part of his speech talking about the concept of imamat or leadership, and then we'll get back.
A leader in an Islamic society must be either a total and perfect icon of Islam, as Imam Ali was, or to be to live and to act like Imam Ali, if not being him. A leader's behavior, actions, words, and standing positions in an Islamic community must fully manifest an image of Islam. This is a natural principle that people are affected by the rulers. The actions and behavior of a ruler and leader in society will influence people. This is a principle. People will look upon their leaders and rulers to act and will move in a way they have taken step into.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This was the audio file of Shahid Beheshti talking about leadership and the imamats. And Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi, Shahid Beheshti is enumerating some main characteristics of a leader of a society and how much the leaders of a society can affect the lives of their people, the people who are living under their leadership. This is very important, something which is, I think, forgotten to this world, isn't it?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, this is very important, obviously, because people are following their leaders. Mm-hmm. We can see, like, the countries in the West, if they are the oppressors, because the leaders are doing that, the whole nation has to follow or see the consequences. Obviously, the people, the general people who That's are right. living, might be there are some people who disagree with them, but obviously, the leaders, when they have such thinking, obviously, people have to follow that. It's one of the, it's a general thing that is happening in the world. And obviously, we can see throughout the history that people were following their kings and the leaders. An-Nasu ala
Dina
Mulukahim. People are following the religion of their chiefs or the, we
or
can say, kings.
Or people are affected by the
affected
leaders.
Affected by the leaders.
Right. Okay.
This is one of the main things. Okay. And that's why, you know, in Islam, the prophets and the leaders were appointed by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Mm-hmm. Why people did not choose prophets from amongst themselves? You know, this was always discussed in old times. Like whenever a prophet used to come with the signs and the miracles and all those things and the books, the chiefs or the, you know, the people who were like running the society, they always had this excuse. They were saying like, why Allah did not choose one of us being the prophet,
that's
and why
right.
he made you the prophet. And that's why he had the argument and he brought the miracles and all those. So basically, this is one of the, we can say, principles that Allah has always sent
a teacher, a leader, a guide from himself. Why? So that people will follow his path.
That's all right. Thank you much, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. Dr. Razazan, some might say that the concept of imamat and leadership is only limited to the Arab Peninsula on that time. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the time of the Prophet, and he was passing away, and the Muslim Ummah and the society might lack a leader, so Prophet Muhammad. And nowadays, in the 21st century, the people do not need such concepts at all, the concept of imamat or leadership. What's your answer to this question? Do you think that the concept of imamat and leadership is not applicable at all in today's world?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This important question can be answered in many different ways, and we can look at these from different aspects. But from the point of view that Shahid Beheshti is talking about, he mentions that very famous saying in the Arabic that says "Annas ala dini mulukihim," so the people are on the religion or on the manner of their leaders, and he wants to, and he says this is very natural, and that's very true, I think, because you know, people are naturally influenced and impressed by the people who are in power. So people who have power in any form of power, I mean, this is not only limited in the, for example, the kings. That is a very obvious example. But in addition to that, people who we can call them elites, people who are celebrities, people who are in power in the sense of not only political power, but also, let's say, social power,
okay,
or let's say a scholarly power or scientific power. These people naturally, this is our nature of humankind. These people who are more powerful are necessarily more influential.
That's right.
A person who has more power will necessarily, will naturally be more influential, and they have a broader domain of influence. This is very natural. And this means that, let's say, a special person who turns out to become somehow in charge of something, or he becomes in focus of other people, who turns out to be in the focus of other people. In addition to the previous responsibilities that he had to the society, he will have a lot of more additional responsibilities for the society. Because at this point, let me bring this example. Imam Ali alayhi salam, or any other person, when he becomes, I mean, formally and officially, when he officially becomes the political leader of the society, he will have a lot of extra responsibilities, even in his personal lifestyle. This is what I wanted to say. People may say, okay, it's obvious that he will have more responsibilities about the society. But I'm saying something more. And he has said in some of his sayings, if a person becomes officially the leader of any type of the society, in many cases, he may have to even change his personal lifestyle.
That's right.
Because people look at him from all the different angles. People look at him as an exemplary for them. If they see that person who is inviting them to be a good person is not a good person himself, or is not actually taking care of his own family and his own deeds, that will have a very bad negative impact on the minds of different people.
And in contrast to today's leaders,
yeah, they are really bad influences.
No, not only the bad influences. The difference between Imam Ali and today's leaders all across the world was that Ali was Ali,
yeah,
and is Ali and will be Ali. Okay, he was the same. Okay,
right.
But nowadays, the leaders, in order, or the presidents or the officials, in order to get more votes, they try to be like the people, okay?
Right.
Their past is very different.
Before election.
Yeah, before election. Their past and presence and the future are very different, but for Imam Ali, the criteria was different.
Yeah, you're right. And so, returning back to your question, you said, is it something that is only for the time of the Prophet? No, of course not, because based on this criterion that I talked about, because people are influenced by the leaders, so the leadership is always an important issue.
Issue in the society. That's
and that's
right.
Why there were, like, obviously, criteria is there. The taqwa is there, like being pious, the most, obviously, being the most knowledgeable, being the most pious in the society. These are the criteria that are set by the, obviously, Islam. And
Why Imam Ali? Obviously, Shahid Beheshti is also referring to that. Why Imam Ali? Because there was no one like Imam Ali. We have in the narrations, for example, if I can just
quote a
couple of one narration from different books. Obviously, this narration has been narrated in a couple of books. Like Tabarani has said in Mu'jam al-Kabir, volume 12, narration number 12,341, and also in Majma' al-Zawa'id, it's volume 9, narration number 184. And similarly in Majma' al-Saghir, it has come, obviously, the hadith is that Abdullah bin Akim, he has said that the Prophet ﷺ has said, إن الله تعالى أوحى إلي في علي ثلاثة أشياء ليلة أسري أبي. The night when I was going for the Mi'raj, the night of Mi'raj,
yes.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has revealed upon me three things about Ali. And the first thing is, أنه سيد المؤمنين. He is the leader and the master of the mu'minin believers.
Okay.
That's why we call him Amirul Mu'minin, Sayyidul Mu'minin. Wa Imamul Muttaqin. He is the leader of the pious ones.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we think about someone being pious, and there is someone who is the master or the leader of the pious ones, Muttaqin, Imamul Muttaqin, Sayyidul Mu'minin. And the third one is Qa'idul Ghuril Muhajjalin. He is the leader on the Day of Judgment for those who will be with the white faces, with the enlightened faces.
Yes, lightened faces.
Enlightened faces.
Faces full of light. That's
faces full of light.
Okay.
So basically, if Imam Ali was chosen as the successor of the Prophet on the Day of Qadir, it was because of these characteristics that was in Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Yes.
And that's why Shahid Beheshti is referring, like, there must be someone who, Ali should be the leader, or someone like Ali,
like
after
Ali.
Him.
Yes.
And all the times we need to have a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, why we need to have a leader? It's because obviously people follow their leaders. They are on the religion of their leaders. They follow what they see. So if a person being at the position of being a leader, being a pious, the society will become pious.
That's all right.
If prophets were not the imams, they were not the leaders of the society, the people wouldn't follow the religion.
But Sayyid Mohsen, at the time of Imam Ali alayhi salam, for the five-year period that he was, he became the caliph, the fourth caliph, and we Shias as the imam of the society. Imam Ali affected the people. But at the same time, he was martyred by the Muslims on that time. So it shows that such an affection and influence did not work. Did it work?
Well, obviously it worked. Obviously, when he wasn't even at the, like, obviously I said, Khilafah is one of the duties of Imam.
Okay.
It comes under the duties of Imam,
yes.
the political leadership,
yes.
We can say, like the Khilafah.
Yes.
So obviously he has the influence of the people, and they are hypocrites as well.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget that there is a whole surah, Surah Al-Munafiqun, in the Quran.
In the Quran.
They were the hypocrites. They were the enemies. They were the influential, we can say, enemies or the in the society, in the Muslim
yes.
society. They were the deviations.
Mm-hmm.
We had the people who were like deviated from the right path.
Yes.
They were there, obviously,
okay.
and who thought that whatever they think is the right thing.
That's right.
And that is the main problem.
Main reason.
Whenever we have an imam or the leader, obviously, there are the enemies.
That's all right.
So we should not say, like, if there is an imam, a perfect person, then the whole society is perfect.
That's
this is
right.
wrong.
Okay.
The theft is there, obviously. Robbery is there. The sins are there.
The sins are there, that's right. That's all right. And sometimes, the terrorists are there. We can say we are judging a society by the leaders that they have. But I think this is the wrong case, isn't it? Because although we can say at the time of the Ma'asum, it
yeah.
was a Ma'asum. They could see him physically every day on the street, but
yeah.
the problems were not solved. The deviations were not solved.
Yeah, you know, the importance and the necessity of having a proper leader, a good leader, does not mean that having it makes everything completely ideal. No, that really helps to have a better society. But it does not mean that people will be free of their own wills. You know, people will have the freedom of wills. And, you know, we have seen at the time of, even at the time of the great prophets of God, that at the same time there have been people who will not follow them.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, yeah, it really helps those people who want to follow the prophets, or those people who want to be good people, when they see a good example in their leaders, it will really help them in
pursuing that goal. It will really help them in being better by just looking at the lifestyle and at the manner and the behavior of their leaders. Okay. This is what we mean by that, and it really is important, in our today's
world, which is very important. That's all right. Thank you much, Dr. Azazadeh and Said Mohsen Naghvi, for your presence in the program. The teacher and dear listeners, thank you much, too, for listening to this episode of The Teacher. You can download for free our previous episodes of the program, The Teacher, on our website, parstudio.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Also, you can visit our YouTube page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanillah.
This man changed the world.
Allahu Akbar. Khomeini Rahbar. Allahu Akbar. Khomeini Rahbar.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
Shuma dar in qarn mo'jiza kardid. ملت ایران ملت معجزه آسای قرن است.
الله اکبر. خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر. خمینی رهبر.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Exalted, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Salam, hello, and welcome to our audience, and particularly a warm welcome to our listeners of our program, The Man Who Changed the World. This program, of course, is dedicated to the memory and to the greatness and to the legacy that Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, is left for the world and is still changing the world. In our previous program, we were discussing with our expert in the studio several important points which we are bringing out from Imam Khomeini's life. And of course, Imam Khomeini's life is, for many experts, from an anthology of a book that has been compiled on Imam Khomeini by academics and experts and scholars around the world, still pretty much, even today, an enigma in spite of all the research and all the papers that have been written about the subject of this man and his great legacy. Of course, we are now seeing the effects of this legacy in terms of the Islamic awakening that is occurring throughout the region, especially in the Middle East region. But of course, it has had its impact all over the world, and that's what we're discussing. We wanted to discuss two aspects today in today's program. The first is the fact that Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, was a man who was not of his time. He was actually beyond time, although he was in the context of the late 20th century. But of course, his words, his manners, his deeds are something beyond time. And we want to look into that aspect of his life. And we want to look at it from different expertise and from different perspectives as possible, as broadly as we can. And secondly, we also want to look at the fact that Imam Khomeini also left a legacy, which he repeated from the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his holy family, that spoke about the fact that as far as Islam is concerned, that is the true Muhammadan Islam, as they say, is the fact that there is the Quran and the infallibles, the holy family of the Holy Prophet, which is in with the 12 Imams, and of course the last Imam is the awaited Savior, Imam al-Mahdi, may God hasten his appearance soon. And we want to put all this into a context where we can understand from which perspective Imam Khomeini was coming from and what he tried to achieve in terms of the goals that he had in his vision as far as the Muslim Ummah were concerned. We're not going to really ask questions in the sense that, you know, why Imam Khomeini did this and why Imam Khomeini did that, but what we really want to do is trying to have a deep and profound understanding of the enigma of Imam Khomeini. So, first of all, I'd like to welcome my guest again, which is Dr. Hassani, who has been so valuable in terms of his perspective and his unique angle on this great personality. And I'd like to welcome him, first of all, onto the program. Thank you, Dr. Hasni.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for being with us. Dr. Hasni, tell us, please, you know, from, you know, this first question, Imam Khomeini, really, although he was a personality of the 20th century, but we didn't get to know him in the sense that of, I would say we were given an introduction to him when he appeared on the scene in terms of the victory of the Islamic Revolution, particularly here in Iran. But as far as Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, was concerned, this was the Islamic Revolution for the entire Muslim Ummah, because that's what his aim was. His aim was to unify the Muslim Ummah. He wanted to guide them, particularly in a century or a time in which religion had taken the back seat. And, of course, what was espoused by capitalism or communist ideologies was at the forefront of what people understood the world to be at that time. And of course, Imam Khomeini saw something far beyond that, and he brought that out of the Holy Quran, and we discussed the fact that he was living the Quran, because even the smallest action you mentioned, Dr. Hasni, was about even the way he drank water, for example, or the way he behaved in front of Edward Shevardnadze in terms of his foreign policy, in terms of his etiquette towards unbelievers, his behavior and humbleness towards believers. So tell us, you know, this man becomes the imam. You know, I mean, imam was a word that we only understood as somebody who leads a prayer in a mosque. But the imam gave a whole new definition to the word in the 20th century as well, in terms of the understanding that there is a need for human beings to have the leadership which connects man to God. Put that in some context for us.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So many different subjects. Brother Ejaz, I am listening to you very carefully. The word you use, enigma. Indeed, this is a big enigma for those who don't want to understand. This is number one.
Right.
With regard to the fact of, but,
we
see the time,
that they don't want to understand because they fear the consequences.
Exactly. You know, the small of Jokon, the picture, the famous picture.
Yes,
enigma.
Yes.
Enigma for, you can see it. It is enigma, but you can talk about it for those who wants to.
Sure.
The point that you made that he cared about Muslims, of course, you talk about Islamic awakening, you know, that's true. But he did care about the entire humanity.
He did.
So that's another subject.
Very good.
Let me start by saying this. Brother Ejaz,
yes.
The great people in the history, and this is my belief, big people, and by big I don't mean physical.
Mm.
I'm talking about the character here, the positive character. Great people, like, they are like mountains.
That's beautifully put. That's very eloquently
the
put.
The bigger they are, the harder to grasp the volume of it.
Exactly.
Great people, and I am going purposely to repeat this. Great personalities, they are like mountains. In order to understand part of it, some of it, you have to step back.
Exactly.
You have to create a distance. It could be physical, could be in time. Imam Khomeini, just like his ancestors, the Impeccables, we believe they are from the family of Sadat.
That's right.
The root goes back to
the Holy Prophet.
Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his holy progeny.
Exactly.
They are so great, just like mountain, you have to step back, and they also like a beautiful picture. You have to step back in order to appreciate the beauty of it.
Exactly.
You know, a miniature, you have to get into the detail of it. There are so many different aspects of a beautiful picture: color, the way it is put, the way it is painted.
Yeah,
you have to step back.
Exactly.
This is number one.
Right.
And Imam Khomeini, as a great person is not the exception in that matter. How long is, how many years after his demise? Why Imam Khomeini still is the subject of real talk? We have so many different, you know, talk shows.
Sure.
But we're talking about something valuable, something important, something worth talking about. Brother Ejaz, Khomeini is a piece of land. When you say,
right,
talking about Khomeini,
yes,
it's only
yes,
a geography.
Mm-hmm.
But Khomeini is a piece of divine work. Just like I mentioned at the beginning.
Divine tapestry, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just like I mentioned the great person and personality of Abu Zar.
Yes.
Who happens to be a great companion of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him.
Of course, yes.
He sets so many different examples for us in order how to deal with government, in order how to deal with the